life teaches us lessons. You'll get good bosses. You'll learn. And as much as you think you're ready for it, you are probably 5 or 10 years not ready for it. But that's life. We all learn.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm joined today by Mark Havercroft, a Brit who is now based in Australia, where he has been for many years. Mark is a senior executive tech evangelist who has been in the HR tech space for more than a couple of decades. He has had senior executive positions with several major tech companies and currently has several hats in the tech space where he has been working for a number of years. He was recognized in 2021 as one of the top innovative leaders by the CIO Times. And he also has been speaking at many industry events and conferences. And that's how we first came to meet one another several years ago in Seoul. And so here we are now. He's in Australia. I'm in the UK. So we're straddling the time zones. But Mark, it's great to have you as our guest today.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's great to connect again.
One of the topics that you were touching on there is when it comes to employee engagement, which I think is a really hot topic in this post-COVID era, in where we have a multitude of technology support available to us and a new digital native younger employee entering the workforce. And there's been a lot of talk about just overall global employee engagement levels are low and like almost as low as they've been before. How do you see things in your world, from where you are? Do you see it as it being like that, not particularly good right now? Or also how can we, if it is indeed bad, how can we maybe go about improving it?
Yeah, I mean,
Sorry to put two or three questions in one.
It isn't as simple as, employee engagement's good or bad, is it? I mean, number one, employee engagement starts with you. Starts with you as an individual, as an employee, right? People suffer burnout and, everybody, and also people, life is a challenge, right? People get ill. Just life in general, right? Everything affects our family, all sorts of different things can do this. So number one, I think employee engagement starts with you looking after yourself.
Okay.
And I think that's important from a HR perspective. I think, EAP, I don't like EAP, I'm going to be honest, because it's a bandage that's used after the situation has broken, right? So I think what we need to do as companies is create an environment where wellness is a selection of services that are available for our people. And that might be things like gym memberships. It might be, an extra set of days off for, mental health or anything like that. But we need to encourage the individual employee and individual to look after themselves. Because if you look at engagement, a lot of it is, I'm burnt out, I'm working all these hours, etc. Now, before I get to the company side of, the answer is, the company makes me do this or my boss makes me do that. If we look at COVID and we look at now where people live and the advent of going back to work 5 days a week in the office and things, as an individual and as a society, we have a voice in that argument, all right? Go back to my point of the triangle and the boss says, and we just do. It's not the way we've evolved as a society globally from that. So number one, look after yourself and understand what your barriers are and what is good for you, right? Because And you then need to work out if you can compromise those or not. And you need to find an environment where those things are valued and fit. It's probably a terrible example. You know, if you're not money hungry and deal focused and of that persuasion, probably working as an analyst in an investment bank isn't probably going to be the right culture for you. And pushing against that, really, I'd argue, well, no, I think you probably just need to be in a different company in a different role. So number one, I think engagement starts with the individual. Now,
jump off that? That's why I hate the phrase work-life balance. Because work-life balance is not, there's a general assumption that that means not working that much. But there's a whole, you know, bunch of people who want to work as much as they physically can because that's what they want to do. And so, yeah, I just wanted to say.
It's a great point. The other thing with work-life balance that gets me is it's kind of like work is a necessary evil. Like, how do I balance off horrible work to my lovely life? Well, I think actually a good career management life is about enjoying the work that you do. I'm not saying 100%. Some days don't come with their usual, every day comes with its usual joy and we come back and go, what a day that was. But, you know, in general, I've got two young kids and I say to them now, you know, lessons I'm teaching you about jobs, follow your passions. Don't worry about money and what everybody tells you and all that kind of thing. Just find things that you love doing. The rest will take care of itself, believe it or not, no matter what it is, right? You know, gardening to law to whatever. I'd hope a 10-year-old isn't into law, but the point is you've got to follow your, you know, work is something that we do and you should enjoy it 99% of the time, you know?
So you're right. It's not just a place.
And it's part of you, right? And if you've got, and this comes back to our point, so looking after yourself, and then also a company that respects your boundaries and that you feel is right. You know, for example, I mean, let's pick some of the things. Being able to work from home, right? Some companies allow that. Some roles allow that. Some roles, it doesn't really work, right? And some companies, it doesn't work for them as well. So again, you know, you as an individual managing your career, you need to kind of pick a role and an environment that works for you and accept that there's certain aspects of that that are needed. Right. And again, an organization will be flexible enough, but they run a business and they need people to deliver an outcome or whatever your job is. Right. So, again, there's a conversation to be had. But I think what's the point I think we're both making here is that have some accountability as an individual in this. Right. You're going to get paid a salary, a good salary, about whatever, you know, you're going to get paid a salary that's going to enable your family, your life, whatever that looks like. You own what works for you. And also you own some compromises that you have to make. I would love to work, you know, one day a week or whatever, you know, you've got to find your balance as an individual. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first point we're making. It's not about them and us. It's about you finding the right thing. And also being realistic in that. I think we're in 7 generations in the workforce now, maybe 8, I lose track. Yeah, the younger generations haven't gone through recessions, they're about to go through things, but they haven't gone through tough times, whatever that is. They have false expectations then around that. You know, I was exactly the same, and so will the next generation be. I wanted to be the CEO after week 2 too, right?
Yeah.
Life teaches us lessons, you'll get good bosses, you'll learn, and as much as you think you're ready for it, you are probably 5 or 10 years not ready for it. But that's life. We all learn, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. You got to live it.
you do. And I think as leaders, you have to recognize 2 aspects. There's knowledge, like technical knowledge, business knowledge, etc., and there is experience. And I've always been lucky to be a young leader, a young executive, and things like that. So you know, I've stepped those things. Just generally in life, life experience, both in work and out of work, helps you make good balanced decisions, right? It just is what it is. Now, young people can have extraordinary experiences that some people 20 years their senior may not have had, from travel, different scenarios, backgrounds, all sorts of things. But life experience counts. And so I think then when you come to an employee engagement as an organization, one of the things I've done when I've talked to boards and CEOs is kind of you have to look at it like your family, right? What is your business? What are the key roles? What are the key locations? What does engagement look like you know, in relation to delivering a bid. And then you have to work around that. And it is a constant exercise. And then you get into areas where I know some very good friends around culture, the power of culture and those things. All of engagement, it's all tied together. And really it's tied together from a point of view of, and this is where I come back to the family analogy, because it's the best way I can explain it, is we all have those family gatherings where there's, you know, cousins, aunties, uncles, etc. There's the little crazier auntie and uncles. There's the older generation that maybe get more tired and need things explaining to them more. Yep. There's the young kids that are running around the table like, you know, crazy young kids, right? And you find that balance of, hang on, everybody, there's an announcement, or let's have our seats now, dinner's coming. That whole coordination is employee engagement and culture. And it tends to lie with the leaders of the family around that. But if you notice it in a family, they don't try and stop people doing things. They try and educate and pair up, you know, younger grandkids with grandparents, right? There's a reason for that. There's a bit of patience. There's a bit of knowledge. There's a benefit to both parties. So again, in an organization, mirroring up your graduate intake, your high performers in their early years with senior executives who have been in the company has value to the senior executive. They get to understand what the internet is and what digital transformation is.
Yep.
And the younger people get to understand a little bit more that you can't just go and buy all these things, that we have to make a profit, that we have to make an investment and things like that. So, you know, again, it comes back to your question, employee engagement, culture, environment. There is a stewardship in the C-level of the business, but it's about embracing that diversity in the context of the story of your business and the purpose of your business, either in the next year, the next 3 years, or ongoing. And if you kind of just take that theory and then go and think of companies like Meta or good old Elon's Tesla, or then go to blue chips like GSK or anything like that, or General Electric, or I don't know, million and one businesses your listeners might listen to, you'll start to see that there is a kind of a cultural imprint, right? There's a value in the business, right? There's a direction to it. There's what you can do and what you can't do, and that will go through different departments, from sales to technology to different things as well. So there's no one answer to it. It's a constant spinning wheel. I just think the one thing you've got to maintain is you've got to maintain an understanding, and this is where technology helps, of who do you have in the business? What skills do you have in the business? And where are the gaps, not only today, but in the next 3 to 6 years as you need to evolve your business? And that's what HR needs to address. So, you know, you want to get into things like data, strategic workforce planning, right? Based on skills, right? Learning investment based on skills and abilities, future leader programs, current leader programs. Those are things that are really, really good investment with HR, and it's HR's time. What HR is getting so much better at, because you start to see a lot more people in HR that are not career HR people. And I think you get a lot more leaders at the C level who also understand that people are now the core asset. So investing in that core asset makes sense.
Yep.
You just need to get better at the business case around that investment. You know, it's still an area where, you know, if you don't have these skills in a year, what's going to happen to the business, right? And it's a lot cheaper to build than buy, right? And so on and so forth. So constant spinning play, engagement, really important. It's a two-way street, you as an individual and as a business. And it's an evolving thing, you know?
You're absolutely right, and that's where the once per year employee survey falls down, because it's a snapshot, and that one particular moment on that one particular day, and you know, have one person do that same survey 10 days consecutively, and there'll be 10 different responses. You know, so I think that's another opportunity with HR, with tech, to be able to, it's not a manual survey. It becomes increasingly automated, easier to roll out, easier to analyze, therefore easier to do more frequently, and therefore address it, the very nature of what you talk about, which is that it's a fluid thing.
Yeah,
that's evolving.
It's a really good point, because I use that technology and have used that technology and get it on a regular basis, and also on particular ideas and particular really engage with your employees. I think one of the things I'd want to make a point of is, as much as the technology can give you that data, it's then about interpretation and communicating back to that. One of the big things I've learned about that, and again, I use kind of all hands as my default, because you're trying to communicate to everybody equally, openly, and allow that communication back. So I think you've got to, these are the results, this is what's happening, I'm sorry, we can't change that, or there's been a misunderstanding or anything like that. It's really important as leaders to utilize that data, but again, to localize it and communicate back to it. People want to be heard. And the only way you know if you've been heard, if people acknowledge that. That's not by, thank you very much for filling out the form. It's about, that being distilled, about things coming back and saying, yeah, okay, we're going to look at changing this. We can't change that.
Yeah.
And
action
then as leaders,
taken.
Action taken. We getting stuff done. Go on, People know it's not always raising companies, but get stuff done. If you say you're going to do something, do it, right? And if you're not going to do it, say you're not going to do it, and this is why. People accept that.
Like
the black hole of nothing.
Yeah, right.
That's the worst anti-engagement thing you've got, because creates a them and us. And it isn't a them and us. We're all in this shit together.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like you said, better to say we're not going to do that, or we can't do that, than to say that we are and then not.
100%. Trust is the commodity in societies, in business, they're everything. If you trust your manager, fantastic, right? Trust is everything, right? And exactly right. Employees aren't idiots. They know, I'd love to do 4-day a week. We can't afford to do a 4-day week. We're not making enough profit. Okay, fair enough. Doing things and communicating and doing what you say, just in life, as an individual employee, as a business, that creates trust, that creates engagement.
I fully agree with your point about the key is the interpretation of the data. And I think that is also an area that is growing rapidly. HR data analytics, of course, is becoming a bigger area in itself. And I think the classic example I always use, having been so involved in the recruitment space now, is with retention. And the first, the first sign is, we have all this turnover. How can we retain our employees? And we go about doing a bunch of things to try to keep those people, whereas it turns out down the line that they were not the right people that should have been retained.
Yeah,
and it required going a step further back to actually look at, are we hiring the right people in the first place?
Yeah,
that we want to retain, need to retain, or even just the people that we don't have to work hard to retain, because they're right for us and we are right for them. So that's always a great example that I use in that aspect. Where do you see that? Is that something that often companies will outsource that? Employee surveys can be done by a third party, and then the analytics is part of that service.
And then they measure it against benchmarks and stuff, and you get a management consultancy and they'll say, again, to me, I'm going to come back to my every business you have is like your own unique family, and it changes on a weekly and a monthly basis. To be honest, I think it's an absolute abdication of responsibility again as leaders. You're absolutely right in what you say from a recruitment perspective. You've got a high attrition issue, right? It could be a natural part of your business. For example, a call center, and I haven't done any work with a call center for a number of years. But it's just, I knew historically they always had a reasonably high attrition. And that was because it was a transient job. It wasn't a career job. It was a student, and it wasn't a career job. So to have a 20, 8% whatever attrition rate was actually all right. You know, it was good. It was more about then thinking, okay, we know we have a transient workforce. What are we doing to make sure we've got bums on seats? So how do we talent pool? How do we, you know, what is our process to have a conveyor of the right talent to do so? So I think you're right. You know, I think on attrition and things, it's about looking at the reasons why, but also, you know, it's more than just, we're not paying them enough. It's kind of like, why are people leaving? Are we doing exit interviews? What's going on? It could be, you know, bad management. It could be a period in time when there was a focus on these particular skills and a big company was poaching them, right? There's so much. This is what we said at the beginning, you know, the big thing with technology, it gives you data to make decisions. However, again, computer says no is not the answer. Oh, well, everybody's saying we don't pay them enough, right? Well, but actually, when we look at our salaries, we're on par with other people.
Yeah.
So obviously, there's something amiss there, right?
And yeah, right.
You have to look past data. You know, like you get into a car nowadays and it's got sat nav and you put in a direction and people just follow that religiously. Right? And sometimes it's not always right, right?
Yeah.
So I just think, and again, with, you know, this is the beauty of us as individuals, right? Is that we can get technology to give us all these scenarios and this data. It doesn't necessarily make it the absolute answer, right? So to your point, attrition is a sign of something, right? But don't leap off the obvious answer. And the reason I say it's lazy leadership is, oh, well, let's just pay them an extra 10%. I guarantee you still get high attrition. There's something else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, when somebody's leaving and they want a reference or they want to get their bonus paid out or anything, they're not going to rock the boat, are they? Right. They're not, you know, we know the game. They're not going to do that. Right. So you have to also think about the source of the data, how accurate that data is and things like that. I think what's really helpful with something like in the recruitment world and things is you talk to a lot of people in the similar jobs across different companies and competitors and things. So there's a great deal of just value of being able to do that. A lot when I'm in the technology space, you put C-level CHROs together, they love to network amongst themselves because they don't really get the chance to find out what the other companies are doing. They don't do that. So again, if you were to turn that round, one of the great values of having a recruitment partner is, well, tell me what's happening in the world around these jobs, right? What are competitors do? What is it? What are you hearing about our value proposition? You know, yeah, great place to work, pay you well, but, you know, I don't know, if you've missed target for a month, you're out or whatever, right? You know, you're all the...
Yep.
So I think, again, that's data. So there's great tools and things to data, but you've got to look at what data have I got? Is that giving me a full picture? Have I got some other third-party data that can challenge that data or confirm that data, et cetera? And do not lose sight of abdication of leadership. You've got to make the right decision with the data and the information in front of you. I've done it. And today I could make a decision. In 2 years' time, I've got more data, more information, and I realize probably made the wrong decision. Don't care. I'm getting stuff done. I'll make a decision and I'll move forward. And then I'll adjust my decision in 2 years and I'll learn from it. But again, you know, to your point, we are, you know, it's just lazy to go, oh, we'll get a third party to do it. Oh, we've checked our salaries against Mercer or something. Oh, well, that's everything's great then. But you still, that's not good. And I think it's...
We've all heard that.
So I think, and I encourage people, if they are out there getting stuff done and moving things forward, is to challenge that. Because do you know why? Because that is how you will move on as an individual. And that is how you will get better results and how you will achieve as an individual. We all know it as an individual and we've all seen it. And so, let's not be lazy. As I said, there's some fantastic tools out there, cultural survey tools, data, et cetera. But that doesn't give us the answer. If that gave us the answer, why on earth do you have a CHRO? Why on earth do you even have anybody in these, when you break it down like that. So, and again, we touched on it on leadership. This is why I say leading leaders is really important, because the question I would ask as a leader of that, say, of that attrition problem, of that sales director who's got that business, what is the information you're working on? And remember, like, you know, what's externally, what are you using to make a right decision? So don't make the decision for them, but mm-hmm. help them recognize the fact that to make the right decision, you need to get as much information as possible and then make an educated, informed decision as best you can on the time frame that you've got. That's human beings. That's what we do,
yep.
right? And I think that's intrinsically us. And that's that's the dissection between technology and humans. We need to lead that and make those decisions.
And on that note, I realize that we have covered a huge amount in this conversation so far, Mark. I really appreciate all of your insights and stories that you've told, but I think we do have to wrap it up because it's been really enjoyable to have you. Thank you so much for being the guest on the podcast.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's a great podcast, and encourage people to listen to it whenever they get a chance.
There we go. And on that note, everybody, let's just remember, get stuff done.
Hi, this is Gordon from the Get Stuff Done podcast. Thank you so much for watching and listening. We will continue to bring you guests from a wide, diverse background and sectors to share with you insights about their leadership, their career experience, what it takes to get stuff done, and how they go about achieving all that they want to do in their professional careers. Once again, thank you for watching, and please do subscribe on all of the podcast platforms that we are available on. It will be greatly appreciated. Thanks so much.